Hi there, Palette Rangers. Sean Orange here to announce the next winner of our Famicom Dojo survey. But before that, we have a message from Operation Rainfall.
Hello, this is Richard Ross from Operation Rainfall. I would like to thank all of our supporters and members for believing in us and helping make Xenoblade Chronicles release in North America a reality. Without any one of your help, Operation Rainfall wouldn't have nearly been as successful as it was. However, this is not the end. From the beginning, our goal was to have Nintendo bring Xenoblade, The Last Story, and Pandora's Tower over to North America, and we intend to stick to our word and continue the campaign. Right now, we need to make sure that Xenoblade Chronicles sells like hotcakes, and to do so, you can pre-order right now from GameStop or starting December 19th from Shop Nintendo. With this, we can show Nintendo that we were serious about wanting these games and that the same can happen with The Last Story and Pandora's Tower. And with your continued participation with the upcoming phases, we will get The Last Story and Pandora's Tower. Thank you all.
So, without further ado, I'd like to announce the winner of our Famicom Dojo survey this week, and it is Francois. So we've already emailed you, Francois. Please send us your email address so that we may send you your prize. And if you haven't taken your survey yet, head over to famicomdojo.tv/survey and let us know what you'd like in a video game store. And now, without further ado, the podcast.
We did it! We did it! Victory!
Yeah, Packers 12-0. Wait, that's not what we're talking about, is it?
Oh, really? 12-0?
12-0.
No. That's not what we're talking about. This is a video game podcast.
Sorry.
And we shun sports, I think.
Madden 12-0.
That's pretty good. But I mean, when you get to numbers like that, it sounds like math, and geeks like math. So
That's true.
That's pretty good. So, but anyway, no, that's not what I'm happy about.
Okay, well, that's too bad.
Because I mean, the Packers winning another game, that was just inevitable. But this is a bit surprising.
Okay. What are you excited about?
I'm excited that the rain came. I mean, remember we've been talking about Project Rainfall a lot?
Yeah. Good old Project Rainfall.
And of course, Project Rainfall's had three goals to get released these three games of Xenoblade, Pandora's Tower, and The Last Story. And one down, two to go.
Wow. Which one was it?
It's really the one I wanted to play the most. It's Xenoblade.
Yeah. So that's pretty exciting news, right? Like, finally coming to the U.S. I'm sure in stores everywhere.
Oh, you killed my buzz there.
Oh, why? You what know? Happened?
Because it's not quite that good.
Oh.
Well, I guess Nintendo of America, maybe after constant gentle nudging, bugging, I don't know, from
constant pelting of rain from an operation.
Yes. Perhaps they finally wanted to be dry, and they just decided, okay, we'll give them what they want. Either that, or a certain retail chain went to Nintendo and went, if you don't want to do it, we'll do it.
Target?
No.
Walmart. Walmart's kind of bad.
Oh, Walmart would have been better. They got a lot of stores.
Don't tell me.
Rhymes with lame mop.
Raindrop?
Oh no. It's GameStop.
Oh.
No, don't. Yay, game's coming. Yes.
I guess.
Okay, what's wrong with GameStop?
What's with GameStop? Where do I start?
At the beginning.
I suppose. I think I recall back in the day getting a certain Zelda game. Maybe it was EB at the time. I'm not really sure, but they're all the same thing now, right?
They bought out EB, and did they buy Funko Land?
Man, I don't
know. Is Funko Land still independent? Gosh, I don't know anymore. I've been out of the States for a long time.
There's never been a Funko Land around where I've been, I don't think so.
Okay.
But yeah, so I remember like 1998 going to get my nice, wonderful Ocarina of Time cart for the N64, picking up a gold Rumble Pack as well, which was, I think was one of the first games to ever utilize that particular peripheral. And then around the
really?
Same time.
No, they've had Rumble Packs at Star Fox.
Really?
Yeah.
What am I thinking of?
Because Rumble Pack was released with Star Fox.
Well, when did Star Fox come out?
Second year, near the end of the second year.
Okay, so like 97. All right, so.
Yeah, but yeah, not too long after, I suppose.
Okay, so, but yeah, so I got that, and I even got a gold controller through Nintendo Power's 100th issue. So I was all gold. I was gilded.
okay.
That was my first time dealing with that kind of particular pre-order madness.
Yeah.
Essentially, I was also 18, so. I had, you know, a job and plenty of my own money to spend on that kind of thing, you know, for the first time in my life ever.
Yeah.
It's not really a habit I've liked to repeat since then, because as the years went on, trying to buy games at such outlets became more and more difficult, because they really, really push you in the pre-orders. You know, there's stories of people trying to go to these stores. And like, you know, they have it on the shelf, but it's like, oh, those are the pre-order copies. It's like, well, all the pre-orders get picked up? Yes. So can you sell those to us? No, because we're punishing you for not pre-ordering it. That's the first time that centered my consciousness as being a kind of poor business model. But new things have cropped up since then, like how employees take games home, open them up, like, or steal codes out of them, especially these days when that's like the incentive to buy new. Is these like one-use download codes that all of a sudden you might pick up a copy, it's either missing or you can't use it because someone else has already, and they try and sell these games as new.
Well, I mean, wow! I was just going to say that's the risk of buying used, but wait! New copies?
Yeah, they put them back in. It's been gutted. That's the term, and you are still paying full price, and it's being sold as new, which, you know, I'm pretty sure is illegal. Or should be anyway.
Well, yeah, if it hasn't, but I mean, isn't GameStop's rationale for gutting the games to prevent shoplifting?
I hadn't heard that, but it sounds like a load of BS to me.
Well, I mean, like when you take a game off the shelf, it's empty.
Yeah, right.
So, like at the worst, you'd be shoplifting an empty case.
Right, but that doesn't mean that like every new they don't even have to put the new copies on. You know, there's other ways of doing that, like having a little card. Or something, or putting them in like security cases, like actual other, you know, stores do. There are plenty of ways around it, so that the rationale falls flat in its face when there are other options out there.
Yeah, I mean, I remember. Well, I guess I haven't been to GameStop for a while, but I remember a few years back, I was buying product number 3.
Oh yeah,
you remember that game? The only of the Capcom 5 that actually. Was exclusive.
Yeah, eventually,
because,
yeah, I believe we covered
no
it.
No one else wanted it, right. But except me. I loved that game. Mm. Anyway, so I went there and I thought, wow, $20 for this game new? That's great. So I took my copy that said new up to the case, and they gave me a copy, and I said, oh, sorry, I wanted a new copy, because they had a used one there too, and it was only like a dollar cheaper.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know, I'm like, I'm going to go new. And they're like, oh, this is the new copy. And I said, well, it's open. And they're like, and then they told me about the shoplifting thing. But the disc was a bit scratched, and actually there was kind of a crease in the manual. So I don't know. That's I don't know what kind of new that was. So yeah. I said, I don't know. I think this looks used. They exchanged it for another new copy, which was also open, but but you know, it looked pretty good. I guess I don't know. I didn't feel like making a big stink and knocking over a magazine rack, especially since they just tricked me into subscribing to Game Informer again.
Right. Yeah. That's the other thing is all the constant upselling, kind of makes it a tedious shopping experience. So I don't. Really go there myself anymore for all these reasons, essentially.
There was a great comic on Penny Arcade a number of years ago, and they're like, all right, you've bought this game. Would you like the official strategy guide with that?
Yeah.
And the Penny Arcade character says, oh, no, I have the internet.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, game. I mean, other than maybe for the collector's appeal and the artwork, there's really no reason for those anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Back in the day when I was like calling the Nintendo hotline to figure out how to get through the last dungeon in Zelda, that was important. But yeah, these days not so much.
But I mean, there are advantages of GameStop, right?
They're in malls.
Yeah, which is where I often shop.
You can go to the food court.
That's not really an advantage of GameStop.
Mm.
Well, I mean, what about selection? Right? They've got selection.
Do they? See, I haven't really been into one lately, so I'm not really sure what kinds of games they have. Okay, I'll take it back. I didn't go to shop there. I just went to kind of scope it out to see what it was like.
Yeah.
They don't really have anything from previous generations anymore. Like, you know, back when like the PS2 was you know, like the hot thing. They at least had like PlayStation 1 games, some Dreamcast ones, and if I was really lucky, maybe Saturn. But they don't really go back that far. So if you want used games, it's pretty much current gen or nothing.
I think right now they only go back to the PS2.
Okay. If even, and I haven't seen any.
And they don't have GameCube or Xbox. So.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Because PS2 is still being sold.
But I mean, these are comparatively small stores, so like Best Buy or Target or wherever else you might want to pick up this stuff. And in some locales, as I learned from discussing it with some 4CR staff, that, you know, in some places that's the only place they have to go to, you know, for any kind of store is a GameStop, unless they want to go online. And online,
which is what I do.
Online, you can also pre-order this starting December 19th on the Nintendo Store.
Oh, so you by this, we're back to Xenoblade. Okay.
Yeah, was that back to Xenoblade? So
speaking of going back to things, so what happened with your Zelda pre-order?
Oh, it was fine. It's just that when Skyward Sword came out, I, you know, had the option of getting it through GameStop because the only way to get like the whole bundle with the Wii Motion Plus controller, the gold one, was to get the pre-order. I went through Best Buy instead because I tend to like them better. But that was an experience and a half itself. But at least it wasn't GameStop.
Why didn't you just do the pre-order through Amazon?
I think I was too late by the time. It came around to it because when I looked for Zelda on Amazon, it was like listed as new for like $100. I was like, wait, I don't think that's right. So I did it through Best Buy, and Best Buy was a little interesting because they weren't going to carry any copies in the store. So I actually went to the store, did my pre-order, and noticed, you know, on the ticket that said I was going to have to pay like the $50 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, wait, that's not right. That's, you know, the bundle 70. So I called them and was like, yeah, we're not going to carry any of those in the store. So you have to go online to pre-order it. And I was like, oh, okay. So I came back and canceled my pre-order. But, you know, in the meantime, I did my online pre-order instead. I couldn't pick in-store pickup because they weren't going to have any copies in the store. So I was going to have it mailed to me, hoping it would arrive the Saturday before it was supposed to be out. It arrived Tuesday. The Tuesday after, so I had to wait a couple days. But I got my Wii Motion Plus and everything. But I got an email about a week before the game came out saying, hey, you should choose in-store pickup.
Wait.
Yeah. Because it's like, you know, this game's going to get mailed to you. It won't get there until Monday at the earliest. So if you want it the same day, switch it. So I was like, I don't think I can do that, but okay. So I called the customer service number that they recommended and talked to someone for maybe half an hour, not really sure, trying to get this to work. And she's like, yeah, I don't see any stores near you that are going to carry it. It's like, well, no one's going to carry it. But, you know, theoretically, if I say I want to pick it up in the store, they'd mail it to the store, wouldn't they? But I guess that's not how the pre-order system at Best Buy works. So once she figured out...
It's strange that it was so hard to do that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know why they wouldn't carry it. I don't know why it's a pre-order exclusive, but I feel like GameStop's responsible for that entire mentality because they very much latched on to like having specific kinds of skins or downloadable content or whatever that a lot of publishers are going towards these days for their new games. And so it's especially funny to me that their new games get gutted so that you can't be sure if the new things you're buying are still gonna all work when you get home.
Wasn't there some scandal with OnLive, whatever that service is called, which had like activation codes in some of the games, but GameStop actually took them out of the boxes because it competed with their own game on demand system.
Yeah, that was really crazy. I don't and then like they were apologized to instead of like, you know, oh, we can do whatever we want. It's like, oh, sorry, GameStop, we forgot that. It's like, no.
Wow. No. Well, that just shows how much power they have.
I suppose, yeah.
I mean, are there even any other national chains for video games? As I said, Funko Land might, but they're mostly used games.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Because like there used to be Babbage's,
mm-hmm.
and Electronics Boutique,
mm-hmm.
and Software Etc.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of those got bought by GameStop or just one business.
Right. So GameStop's got a monopoly now, huh? I mean,
they kind of do. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's still mom and pops, but
yeah, and you know, there's still the big box stores that carry video games. So, but they have so much sway. Over the industry now, it's kind of crazy. So clearly the business model works, even though I hate it.
I guess, but I don't know. If we really do go to that DLC future, you know, that we've talked about a few times.
Yeah.
I mean, that pretty much makes GameStop, you know, redundant.
Right. Yeah, they're definitely participating very heavily in the thing that's keeping, you know, physical media alive.
Yeah, because I mean, really, GameStop's bread and butter is used games.
Yeah, well,
that's one of the reasons they don't have a lot of copies of new games, because used games are so much more profitable.
I suppose so.
Well, think about it. They probably get about a 10% markup on a new game. You know.
Right.
You know, a $50 game, they probably buy it for like, let's say they're getting a fairly good markup. Let's say they're buying it for $40.
Mm.
You know, they have to make sure they sell it new before. Now, if it's a game that doesn't sell well,
mm-hmm.
they'll have to discount the price just to clear inventory.
Right.
They're taking a risk with a new game. But with a used game, you know, they pay nothing. If you ever sold games to GameStop, I mean, they pay nothing. They've got to have at least a 50% markup on any used game. So even if they're not selling it for as much,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're clearly making a lot of coin from used games. I mean, maybe this is a conspiracy theory from me, but I think that's maybe why they don't carry a lot of copies of new games. I remember when I bought Munomasa, like the Demon Blade for Wii.
Yeah.
They went, oh, we have a used copy of that. It's $2 cheaper. You know, they were really trying to push that one on me. And I'm like, I think I'll get the new one. And they're like, the used one's the same. It has the same warranty. And I'm like, no, right. I choose to support the publisher. You know?
Yeah. You know, maybe you're hitting on something here. Because their used stuff doesn't cost that much less, but they must get a much better market for that. And if they're already gutting them and selling them as new to sort of cover the spread, as it were, for the difference between a new and a used game, then that's just dishonest at the very least. And again, if I armchair quarterback this thing, illegal.
Go for it. I don't know about that, but it's definitely not nice. I suppose you can't really take someone to court for not being nice, though. But I don't know. They will continue to sell games as long as physical media is dominant. I think they've got a pretty good business model. Maybe one that I don't ethically agree with, but here's the thing.
Okay.
Now, I don't know who to give props to exactly.
Yeah,
but if GameStop is the ones who went, hey, we'll release Xenoblade,
right?
Then they get some props in my book, you know.
Well, I mean, this sucks and all, but is there like precedent for it?
Kind of. Nintendo has done, you know, very limited releases before for certain games.
Sure.
I guess the best example would be Electroplankton.
Okay.
Which it only sold through its Nintendo World store. Like, that's one store.
Okay.
You know, that's not a chain. That's one store. And I think they sold it on their website too, but like I think Nintendo's key demographic doesn't buy through their website.
Yeah, because if they didn't have some physical store to sell in, even if it's just the one, I was wondering if they would even bother to sell it online at all, which I'm guessing the answer is no, based on their partnership with GameStop.
I mean, there's been online exclusive things before, but none of them are things that you would consider good sellers. The Sega Broadband adapter for the Dreamcast, that was online only.
Oh, right.
And that's why it's so incredibly rare.
Oh, the component cables for the GameCube were online only?
Yep. Things like that. So, I mean, there is some precedent for it. And one thing that there's a very low risk for Nintendo for this game because it's already been fully translated.
Yeah.
Which leads me to wonder why it's going to take until April to release it.
I don't know.
I'm thinking so it doesn't compete against Skyward Sword.
That could very well be, and people have been speculating that for a while now as to why Nintendo was quiet about it. But yeah. I don't think that they were ever intending to release it. To be honest, I really think based on this exclusivity deal that they basically don't plan on releasing it as a major release. Is just an indication that they're probably just trying to placate the noisiest people about it, which would have to be the Operation Rainfall guys. Because, like, how many Facebook users do they have?
Like 10,000 now?
Yeah. So that's not a huge number, but it's not, you know, it's definitely more than we have.
Well, I mean, the thing is, that's just the people who have decided to, you know, subscribe to them. But I think their message is getting out to a lot more people than that. I mean,
right.
I mean, when this game was announced, I read about it on Joystick and a couple other sites, and all of them mentioned Project Rainfall. Mm-hmm. So they were a known thing. I'd say that if you mentioned Xenoblade to anybody, I'd say far more than half of them would automatically make the association to Project Rainfall.
Okay, sure.
So and that's huge. That's huge. I think what Nintendo was a little more worried about was like all the people who were like, I'm done with Nintendo after this. So Nintendo can go, okay, we gave it to you. And then if it doesn't sell, which, you know, being exclusive to one retailer, you know, maybe it's not going to sell, you know.
Yeah.
Then Nintendo can go, see? You whined about it and you didn't even buy it, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to sell to the people who are clamoring for it, you know, through either one of these two outlets because they're already expecting it. But you know, are they going to, like, put any advertising into it? GameStop's pretty good about advertising their exclusives. So
they're good at advertising them in store. I don't think this game is big enough that they're going to get, like, a TV campaign or anything.
You don't think so? Yeah, because if they don't advertise the fact that it's out, they're not going to get the Joe Schmo who might be interested in this kind of game, but just don't know it exists or that it wasn't going to be released here. Don't know the story, essentially.
Well,
they're not even trying.
If GameStop puts up one poster in one store, they'll be doing more to advertise it than Nintendo of America ever did. So, sorry. Am I bitter? I'm still mad at Nintendo of America. I mean, I know I should be really happy right now because, you know, they did give me what I wanted, I guess.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just wish they were a little more enthusiastic about it. Like, we've listened to you fans. We're going to do this in wide release, and you'll get that limited edition that Europe got. We're not. We're getting a bare bones GameStop exclusive copy. What? Almost a year after, you know?
Right.
Maybe not almost a year, but let's see, April. It's 4 months. It's been out for a month. Okay, well, not quite that long after, but. But still, the thing is, it might not sell all that well because the people, the most hardcore people who really wanted this game, you know, the diehard people, the people who would have been spreading its praises, have already bought it. They've modded their Wiis.
Yep.
And they've gotten it. And the people who aren't as hardcore, when that game came out, the torrent for it was very active.
Right.
I'm sure there's more pirated copies of that game out there now than legal copies. And I think a lot of people just felt that their piracy was justified. Because they're like,
you know, Nintendo's not going to release this, I think everyone on Operation Rainfall is still going to buy it, even if they already have it, even if they've already played it.
Right.
Because those guys are really determined. I think they're going to vote with their wallets. And if they don't, well, then maybe they don't actually deserve to have this released, you know?
Yeah, I'm wondering if you're being a little too hard on Nintendo of America, and if there are other instances in the past that have sort of bitten them, that there was a lot of fan outcry for a certain kind of game.
Yeah, I see what you're getting at.
Can you think of something? I can think of one thing potentially.
Is your thing Owen Down?
It might be.
Go for it. You go for that one first. I'll think of something.
Well, you know, people were like really, really importing Owen Don, so I'm sure that really helped the sales. And it cost a lot, even in Japan. It cost about as much to import as like it would cost to get like a GameCube or a Wii title.
Yeah, it was running for like $45 used. It was crazy.
Yeah, and it was a really fun game, and a big part of that was, you know, the J-pop, J-rock stuff that was on there. So that certainly appealed to a niche audience to begin with. So eventually they made a remake / sequel / I don't know what to really call it, called Elite Beat Agents.
Reimagining,
yes. This time, of course, with a very quintessential, like, you know, American British rock soundtrack.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just as good because they really captured the same spirits that the first game brought.
Oh, I liked it too, yeah.
But, you know, the Owen Don thing has some roots in Japanese culture.
Yeah.
At the very least. But for Elite Beat Agents, it was like this secret service agency that helped people through the power of song or something. It was like a totally fictionalized
the plot was a little shoehorned in. Although probably the original thing of having cheerleaders was a bit shoehorned in.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, true. But you know, it's at least recognizable enough to an average Japanese person, I think, that it would be silly to them.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just like, I don't know, it doesn't really resonate on the same cultural level, I suppose. Yeah.
But yeah, Nintendo got burnt really bad on that game.
How bad did they get burned? Because I bought a copy, but I never actually bought the check sales figures and whatnot.
I didn't see actual numbers on this, but like it never charted, you know.
Right.
Nintendo gave it a wide release, and it was I bought my copy because I was in Japan when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back to the States about a month and a half after it was released. And I got my copy for $11 new.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty telling sign.
Yeah. On the other hand, it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison because, you know, in this case, they basically had to make a brand-new game. They had the engine already, obviously. But they had to make new sprites, new art, new music. Yeah, they had to do all the work of making a brand-new game. More or less, or a sequel, and when you spend that much effort on something and it doesn't sell well, it's like, well, why did I bother? Whereas, you know, the English version of Xenoblade's been made and released in Europe already, and there's not much they have to do to release it in the U.S.
And that's why hats off to Nintendo Europe, because they're the ones who incurred the risk.
Yeah,
I think the thing we have to think about there is Nintendo of America was looking at Europe very closely. And I think Operation Rainfall even helped there. I mean, the people who were buying and importing that game probably helped the sales as well.
Yep.
But Nintendo of America didn't release one game that still, you know, smarts to me to this day, A Disaster Day of Crisis. I have the Japanese version, and it's great. But, like, all the voice acting is already done with an American voice cast.
Yep.
The translation is, of course, totally done. And it's a game meant to appeal to American audiences. It's like a Jerry Bruckheimer movie, you know, kind of action scenes. I guess you could compare it to, like, The Day After Tomorrow, the movie.
Sure.
But actually entertaining. So I really like this game. It's done by Monolith Soft, which Nintendo bought them. You know, they bought out this company. They used to be part of Bandai.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Sorry, Namco Bandai.
Namco Bandai,
so
right.
The Namco side of it. Because they released, you know, the great Xenosaga and, am I pronouncing this right? Baitan Kaitos?
Oh,
Baton Kaitos.
Yeah, that was see, that was something else too. That was something I remember seeing a lot in Japan. People said, "Hey, yep, they should bring this to America," and then they did, and I didn't buy it.
Yeah, and it didn't do well in America. The first game did okay. The second game pretty bad.
Yeah,
and so I mean, so there is precedent because you know, yeah, Nintendo does occasionally release some of these weird things. Did Odama get an American release?
Odama?
Yeah. That feudal Japan pinball bongo controlled game.
I don't know. I'm sure one of our listeners must know. Or probably all of them.
But the fact
I think they're smarter than us.
But the fact that it even came out in Japan is crazy. I know it was planned for an American release, and I just went, really? So you know, things like that. So, I mean, they have taken some risks, and there have been some crazy games that I'm really surprised ever made it to America in the first place.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's games that look like a sure deal that Nintendo passes on that I'm just confused by. The first Sin and Punishment.
Oh, right.
Which then went on to become the best-selling virtual console title when they finally did release it. But the thing is, it was already entirely in English.
Okay.
So to release it, all they would have had to do is, you know, press some cards. Then again, it was pretty late in Nintendo's life, and they were gearing up for the GameCube. And then, of course, they released the sequel to Sin and Punishment, and it sold tens and tens of copies. It sold horrible, which is too bad because, okay, here's my guilty admission. I didn't buy it, even though I was totally in favor of it being released because I loved the first Sin and Punishment. But in the end, I think everybody agreed that it was a good game, but nobody bought it.
Is this? I guess this is going to switch gears a little bit. Is this an excuse or a good reason to go to a digital only model for games in the future? I have a reason I'm bringing this up.
And that's
because as of 2012, none of the big music publishers are going to release CD albums anymore.
What?
They're going to do special collections and whatnot for CDs, but the CD format is basically dead now. They're going to release digital online copies, and that's pretty much it.
Wait, really? What? I didn't hear this.
I'll have to dig up the story, but I only heard about it a few weeks ago.
2012. That's next year. In a few weeks.
Yes. Well, if you know, upon hearing this, I was like, no, that can't be right, because I remember going into Best Buy and there just being just like racks upon racks of music, and I went into my local Best Buy, there's like nothing left already. Like there's barely anything that you can just pick up. You know, there's not a lot of old stuff. If there's anything that's new, they don't have a lot of copies of it. This is already happening.
So record stores are just, they're done?
I guess. I mean, you know, it'll take a few years, I think, before
it must not be hitting Japan entirely, because we still got a lot of music stores.
Well, here. I'm talking about the U.S. publishers.
Yeah, but whoa! So, like, to listen to music now, you have to have a computer.
It seems that way. It seems to be profitable enough for them to do this, and which is kind of interesting. No wonder they've been pushing all this digital rights management stuff, because they must have been, you know, they must have seen the writing on the wall eventually. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. right. So.
So like liner notes, album covers. I mean, they still have digital versions, but I mean.
Right. Right.
You can't CD
hold it
inserts
in your hand anymore.
When you pull the CD out of the case and there's some artwork underneath it, and you're like, "Wow, that's pretty cool." That's done.
Well, go back farther than that. Like, you know, the CD versions of the stuff is just like a miniature of the liner notes that they had for vinyl albums, and those were physically huge. And when things went to CD, sure, the sound quality might have gotten better. Although I guess
arguably,
that's, arguably, yeah, not as much warmth. If you talk to those audio files, but also it's just like the experience of, like, you know, just like scanning through the liner notes as you're listening to the music is more or less gone, or at least it's not as potent as it once was. I never really had those experiences myself, but this is how I understand it from those who lived through those ancient times in the 20th century.
Wow, that's
so. I mean,
that's big. That's big.
This does all come back around to our first episode, where it's like things are going to go digital, and if certain companies,
it's going to be more gradual, though.
Yeah, you would think, but yeah, it just seems that they're just pulling the ripcord on it as of next year. So I guess the world really is ending for music anyway.
Wow, that blows my mind.
It'll be harder for games, though, because we're talking about like gigabytes and gigabytes of libraries that are out there now, especially with the higher definition stuff. Like you would need, you know, a 10 terabyte hard drive, I think, to store your PS3 game library on. Well, that's probably not true, because you have the option of installing your games and stuff. But if you have the kind of game library that I have, no, you're definitely gonna need that physical storage, and certain companies, Nintendo, need to catch up to the fact that they need some kind of massive storage option for their console.
I hear Nintendo's going punch cards next year.
Yep, all 32 bits that are allotted on each card. I hear that to play the Zelda game via card only takes about 1 million punch cards.
Yeah, it's still easier than friend codes. We should rag on Nintendo. Okay, Nintendo, I'm going to give you this one, because Nintendo, you released a game that you gave a bit of effort, and that's more than I was expecting. So
is that it's like a backhanded compliment. It doesn't sound like a lot of praise.
Yeah,
to me.
Sorry. Nintendo, thank you for releasing a game that I really wanted, that was already entirely translated and ready to go. Thank you for pushing that green button and, you know, throwing us a bone. No, that's still left hand.
Yeah, it sounded a little snarky, but, you know.
Okay. Nintendo, I wanted to play this game, and you're releasing it. You listen to the fans, and I appreciate that. And I will buy this. Money will go into your pocket, because I will buy it from Nintendo.com.
Yeah, same here.
Because I just think that's the best way to show Nintendo, you know, because they'll make a higher profit on that. Mm. And if enough people do buy this, and if Operation Rainfall can really energize its base, and they all buy copies, you know, from Nintendo or from you know, GameSpot, GameStop, GameStop, then, you know, maybe. You know, if GameStop makes enough money, they might be like, hey, Nintendo, you got anything else that we can release like this? And maybe that's the way Last Story and Pandora's Tower comes out here. Or if Nintendo makes enough, maybe they'll actually give them a wide release.
Now, I've heard, I think Pandora's Tower isn't actually all that good, is what I've heard.
It depends who you ask. I'd say that it's better than about 90% of JRPGs being released these days. But then again, that's a left-handed compliment, too.
Yeah. What?
Okay. What's the last JRPG you played and loved?
Grandia 2?
That's like 10 years old now. Older. That's like. Wow.
Yeah, the Dreamcast version.
Yeah, I know.
Because it did come out for PS2 eventually. And then there was a. Was it called Grandia 3? I don't remember, but
yes,
I heard.
It was.
I heard it
was.
Wasn't that great. I never picked it up.
Yeah, and there was also like Grandia Extreme, which was like a halfway chapter.
That's right. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, Grandia Extreme came out, then Grandia 3 came out, but neither one.
The thing
one...
is, Grandia Extreme burnt so many people that not many people bought Grandia 3.
I think the last one I played was Final Fantasy X, and then I stopped at Blitzball and got way more excited about Blitzball than the rest of the game and didn't go back to it, essentially.
Well, I think that's one of the problems. Like, JRPGs in general have become big hair, whiny protagonist, ragtag bunch of kids saves the world again and again and again and again and again and again. And all that's really being enhanced is like the CGI cutscenes.
Sure.
Okay, what was the last JRPG I played? Let's see, there was, if you're only saying console ones, that cuts out a lot, because I do play a lot of JRPGs on handheld.
Sure.
Let's see, last console one. That would be, do we count Sakura Wars as an RPG? Maybe not. It's more of a simulation / dating sim.
Yeah,
game.
I was going to say, if you think it's dating sims or RPGs, then sure.
And it's a strategy RPG, but Valkyria Chronicles was fantastic.
I think that counts.
Okay, that was wonderful. And the game before that was Shadow Hearts, which came out in like 2005. So I really haven't played many in that, but it used to be my favorite genre. I used to play all kinds of them. But, like, what's out today? Like, tales of same plot? I liked Tales of Symphonia.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the other Tales games were... Tales fans are going to skin me alive for this, but their stories and art styles are so similar that I can't really tell the games apart anymore.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of sameness going on, and there's not a lot of skill left, I guess, to play in the games anymore, because that's why I liked Grandia 2 so much, was because they had a fairly active turn-based system, still very much turn-based,
but there was
strategy and like character placement. There was ways to like get your turns to get shuffled around if you were doing the right stuff. It was just really, really well done for a turn-based system. Absolutely.
That's the thing, though. I mean, JRPGs and fighters, for that extent, have moved away from the mainstream. They've become so niche. Although, I don't know, Final Fantasy is still trying to be mainstream appeal. But, you know, in general... I hear Arkrai's Fantasia is good if you can excuse the terrible, terrible, horrible localization.
Okay.
But I don't know if I can. That's the thing. Like, if it got a good localization, I probably would be playing it right now. But it sits because I watched video clips. That was my mistake, watching the trailer. I'm like, oh, wow. It still looks like a really fun game, and I played it at Tokyo Game Show a number of years ago and loved it.
Mm.
The battle system's quite good, but that's going to be the mar on that game is the localization. But Xenoblade is a good game. Before it came out in an English version, the users of NeoGAF pretty much called it, you know, like the JRPG of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came out this year, everyone's like, this is the best JRPG of 2010. And the way it looks right now, the American version might be the best JRPG of 2011. Okay, I mean, I don't know, maybe Final Fantasy 13 2 or whatever. There's advanced math going on in these numbering systems.
Yeah.
Will be fantastic, but I don't know. I Final Fantasy 13, as beautiful as it was, and it is a gorgeous, gorgeous game, was a little too much press A to win, now sit through this cutscene for me.
Yeah.
Which is strange, because I love cutscenes. Final Fantasy 13, I was watching, and I'm like, this would make a much better 8-hour movie than a 30-hour game.
Yeah, definitely, right? I think I'm spoiled now. I think BioWare has nailed the RPG to North American sensibilities to such an extent that I compare everything else to it. And
I guess, although like I like the JRPG sensibilities, because like Western RPGs to me are too, I don't know, they're really stat based, a lot of them. Like I tried to get into Baldur's Gate and never really was able to. And too many of them... Now, BioWare's the exception here, because BioWare has fantastic stories in their games. But a lot of Western RPGs really kind of forgo the story in favor of, you know, customization.
Yeah, so maybe it's not even fair to call these games RPGs, really, because they're more action RPGs, and the RPG, yeah, I guess, leans more towards the action, especially if we're talking about like Mass Effect 2 versus Mass Effect.
Exactly,
1.
Exactly.
I know, like Dragon Age had like a tactics system, but I never used it. I didn't understand why I would need it. It was much easier to play like on an easier difficulty level and just switch between my characters as needed. Slows the action down. But really, I play those games more for the story than the action anyway.
I really thought that the savior of JRPGs, like bringing it back, ought to be Dragon Quest X for the Wii.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was announced that it was a MMORPG.
Right. And that's...
And my interest just gone. Because that used to be like the bastion of what a JRPG was.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe I'm just old and trying to hang on to nostalgia in a, you know, but that's what I wanted. That's what I really wanted. I wanted another Dragon Quest game. I didn't want Dragon Quest World, you know, the World of Warcraft.
Yeah, although you mentioned World of Warcraft. I feel like in North America that's like the only true RPG left is the MMO. World of Warcraft, yeah, being the most spectacular example of it, because
yeah,
you know, there's like the BioWare stuff. There's questing, sort of. You know, there's very specific, yeah, stories you can do, and then they never change. You might get DLC, but you, yeah, know, I think this a tighter gaming experience. Whereas you will pour hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours into an MMO for a lot of, well, I mean, I guess it's gotten better since I stopped playing stuff like City of Heroes,
okay,
like 5 years ago or so, or 6 years ago even. But at least at the time, there's just like a lot of like random stuff you can do that's not necessarily story based. It's just like you know, go to this field, find me these item drops and I'll pay you money. So not really a lot of story, just like go out and kill things. Which is,
and that can be fun. I loved Phantasy Star Online. It had pretty much no story to speak of.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah.
Grinding's like just a part of classic RPGs, and like that's the only ones you don't have to grind in BioWare games. There's really no benefit to it.
That's the thing, though. I kind of like there to be a benefit for things I do.
So yeah, you know, it's basically like how much of the story do you want to experience, and I want to experience all of it, of course, which means like a 60-hour playthrough session if I want to get through the whole game. So
I don't know. I love modern graphics. I love 3D things, but can we take that, but have a story and like battle system as good as Final Fantasy III?
You mean 6?
Stop doing that. Yes. I mean, you know, I'm the one who lives in Japan. I'm the one who should be correcting you on these things, but.
But, well, I'm, you know, because I immediately think you must mean the actual 3, and then I'm like, no, he can't be meaning that, so I have to clarify.
No, the battle system on that was not flawless.
So that's another game that got released in America eventually as a 3D update of the original game, right, on the DS.
Yeah, and on the iPod, yeah.
Oh, right.
And those versions look fantastic. They look really, really good. A lot better than the DS ones.
Well, that was the first time that America got a legit copy, was that DS port.
Yeah.
Well, not port, remake.
Before that, it was just fan subs and stuff.
Yeah. So you know, as of that, we've had access to all the games. But yeah, I can't imagine many people actually played it, because I didn't buy it.
I bought it, but didn't play it very much. It's really hard to talk like that. Let's never do that again.
I like some of these systems, though. Like the job system, like in Final Fantasy V, was really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And something that I wish that more games could do. Maybe we should just make those games.
I think so.
Stop waiting for someone else to do it.
Let's start a development house and start making games.
It's got to be easy, right? Making games has to be the easiest thing in the world.
Oh, of course. I can't think of anything easier.
We should have been making games this whole time instead of talking about them.
I know.
What are we doing?
So anybody out there listening to our podcast, if you are a graphic designer or a sound guy and are willing to settle for less.
As in nothing.
please contact us. You'll get a share in all of the probably millions we're going to make off the game that has yet to fully materialize. But yes, if you'd like to be part of Project Make a Game. Oh, I gotta think of something more clever than that, don't I?
I think Tales of Same Story is actually a really good name for a game.
Tales of Same Story. Tales of Generic. Yeah. Or Final Fantasy for real. Like, it really will be the last game. It really will be the final thing. But okay. Speaking of uncreative names, okay. Yeah. Final Fantasy. Okay, the guy leaves Final Fantasy. He goes to form Mistwalker, he makes a new company. And he and his big epic RPG is called Last Story. And it's set in a fantasy universe, so in a way, that last story could be a Final Fantasy. I mean, it's just like, come on! Come on!
Well, it makes sense in a way, because at least in those game universes, those stories tend to take place around fairly apocalyptic worldwide events.
Yeah, that's true.
So given that, wow, that's really like Revelations heavy stuff there, man.
I know. Oh, man, I want to play Last Story. Nintendo, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I said bad things about you. I do love you. Mario Land 3D, that makes me love you again. Mario Kart for the 3DS, that makes me love you again. So all will be forgiven if you can give me Last Story. Right. If you can't get around to Pandora Tower, that's okay, because I really don't have that much gaming time anyway. But please give me Last Story.
Well, that's all I got.
I think that's all I've got, too. We talked about a lot there, and I don't know. I think my final thoughts on it are Nintendo, thank you. I mean, maybe my expectations are lower. But Nintendo, thank you. GameStop, if it really was you who was pushing for this game and not just and are actually going to do something with it and try to push that, then I thank you too.
Yeah, I want to say thank you as well, but that doesn't mean I'm sorry about any of the things I said, because I still think those things are all terrible.
But yeah, this is good news, and we should be celebrating it.
Yes.
And yeah, woo indeed. So, Operation Rainfall, hats off, congratulations, and this game's really good. You're gonna like it, and you've earned it.
Yeah, well, if you guys like us and like the things that we like to say, and hope that someday we can make a wonderful game for you. No. yeah, please leave us your feedback at our website for the podcast, which is famicomdojo.tv/podcast, which is where you can find wonderful links to us on, Twitter, Facebook, our iTunes storefront, free iTunes storefront, where you can also find this podcast, where I think, if you've been enjoying the show, you should rate it and leave a comment telling us
that would be nice.
how much you guys have been enjoying it, because the more you tell people about it, the more people on iTunes can listen to it themselves, because people will be more aware of it, and they'll start popping up in their lists, and yeah, and for that we couldn't thank you guys enough.
And for the support everyone has so already far. Rated it, thanks a lot, and we'll try to include you in the credits of our blockbuster game that we're starting right now. So send your art samples and music samples to podcast@famicomdojo.tv.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take the best of those, and you'll be allowed to join our exclusive team of making a game, which I've been told couldn't be easier.
So easy. Oh, my God.
So easy. I mean, yeah.
And
I mean, it's much, much more difficult to criticize the industry.
Yes.
It's so much easier to just make a game.
That's right. And then have those very few critics out there criticize what you've made.
Yeah, critics work so hard. Man.
Speaking of which, last but not least, it's the holidays, and if you guys want your own very own copy of the Famicom Dojo Season 1 DVD to enjoy in your homes this holiday season, then you should order it now, because it'll make sure it gets to you in time for your festivities. Again, the No Shame promo code is still active, still going strong throughout these holidays, and if you use it now at famicomdojo.tv, we won't pack it with fairy dust or anything. Where am I going with this?
I don't know
either. But, oh God.
But I do know what you're trying to say. Just makes a good gift to the gamer in your life. And if you're quite young listening to this, ask Santa for it, because mm-hmm. Santa and I have a little deal.
It fits in your
stocking. We don't make as much money when we're going through Santa as a distributor.
Yes.
But you know, because he's real. Okay, good.
He's so real. Okay,
covered the bases in case my daughter listens to this podcast. Okay.
Oh, no.
Santa's totally real. And right. He likes our show.
Yes. Oh.
I'll see if we can get him on an episode.
Yep. We'll just send an elf up to the North Pole for us.
There he is now.
This is Santa. Buy Famicom Dojo DVD. Cookies.
See you, Santa. Wow, what a lucky break. Okay, that's all I got for this week.
All right, thanks everyone, and we'll see you next time.
What is with Wisconsin? The Brewers had a not embarrassing season.
Until they didn't make it to the frickin'...
Yeah, but at least people heard of the Brewers this year.
That's true.
And one of the Brewers got MVP, you know.
Right.
So I mean, they had a distinctly non-embarrassing season compared to what they usually have.
It's all the political brouhaha. It's making everyone supercharged and angry about everything.
I suppose. Except that most of the players don't live in Wisconsin.
True.
Like, what, Aaron Rodgers lives in California or something? Mm-hmm. He should really move to Wisconsin, because I think people might like him here.